Welcome back, everybody. I'm Mark Steiner, and you're listening to our program right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. That's Begin the Beguine by Artie Shaw, recorded on this day in 1938. Last Friday, I walked through the American Visionary Arts Museum with its director, Rebecca Hofberger. She took me on a tour of their latest exhibition that has about a month to go before it closes, as they prepare to celebrate their 20th season. The exhibition, which opened last September, is called The Visionary Experience, From St. Francis to Finster, an amazing exhibition with works by folks like Jimi Hendrix, yes, that Jimi Hendrix, and the actor Terrence Howard, and Howard Finster, and the otherworldly Ingo Swann, and more. So enjoy the next hour for a magical tour around the American Visionary Arts Museum.
Hello, this is Rebecca Hofberger, a devotee of Mark Steiner. Okay, now you're here to see The Visionary Experience, which closes the last day of August. So there are only a few more weeks to see it.
Five more weeks.
It's called The Visionary Experience, St. Francis, who had his visions, to Finster, or Reverend Howard Finster, who would have been 100 this year. And both from people of vision. And what we want is everybody who walks through our doors to think about where they are most inspired. I'm going to ask you, okay, Mr. Steiner,
yes.
Do you find that your most brilliant thoughts come to you in the shower, which many people will say, or do they come when you're driving? Many people feel like when they're concentrating on driving, their mind comes out, like this other part of their mind goes and picks up all sorts of inspirational thoughts. And then a lot of people say in dreaming, like they'll wake up in the middle of the night and they'll think, ah, these are the perfect words. I won't let myself forget this. It's exactly what I need to remember. And if they don't write it down, it's gone with the dawn. A lot of times it's alone in the woods or alone in nature. So I want everybody who comes through here to be more attuned to what is their best mode of the visionary experience.
So you're asking me for my answer right now?
I'm ready.
I can never do that, but let me think. It's probably walking in the woods and in the country road in the morning. And my dreams, which is why I keep a book next to the bed to write in.
How long have you been keeping your dream journal?
Most of my life.
Has anything come to you in a dream when you were, let's say, decades ago that has... Then you realize why you dreamed it, that it came true in some miraculous way?
Yeah. Yes. And it has. I mean, because these dreams we have are not just part of our unconscious, but they are connected to something larger and deeper in this great mystery that surrounds us.
Speaking of that, do you remember the comedian Robert Klein from Canada did a very funny bit? Remember Dr. Joyce Brothers, who was kind of a psychiatrist and dream expert, and Robert Klein said, you know, I keep on having this recurring dream ever since I turned 16 of hot dogs running through the Highland Tunnel, squirting mustard. And he says, what could that mean, Dr. Brothers? And she said, you're hungry.
Amen.
So we begin, actually the first word of our exhibition is had by local artist, Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and it's about the founding fathers. And the fact that the founding fathers, many of them were not ashamed to say that they had mystical experiences, and their visions would get published in the newspaper, such as George Washington, but actually many of them were very open to revelatory experience, and also the role of the Iroquois Nation in helping shape the actual documents of our freedom, the wording, etc. But let's go up here, and I'm going to introduce you to Ingo Swann.
Ingo Swann?
Yes.
This is the Bob Hieronymus mural here?
Yes, of his understanding of early Baltimore. And it also has kind of other symbols in it. There's a yellow submarine here, etc. He does a great explanation.
Bob always has to have a yellow submarine.
Yes. And you know, he, on his own, was quite some visionary in that he created, the first accredited spiritual university, Aquarian University of Maryland, ALM. But also he and Zoe together really got that holistic health center going. He's done a lot. And then the first Waldorf school that my own daughter went to, the new morning school, yeah, in the early days, you know. So it's wonderful to be able to celebrate some of the local people who certainly have had a life of visionary experience. And it wasn't just like self-involved, but they really tried to help all the rest of us.
Absolutely. And Bob was also, I think, probably Baltimore's original muralist.
Yes, I think so too. And he has done a lot of good things. So here at the Visionary Experience, what I really want, you can hear all the wonderful children in the background. We have 100 here today. But I wanted to say I was really inspired to do this exhibition by a fact that in the early days of the patent world, where people would say, I have an original idea and seek to get it confirmed, they would make a drawing of their invention and describe it. And then when it was accepted as being original, the different patent offices around the world would stamp it with almost like a birth certificate with the hour and minute that it was accepted so that they could prove they were the first to invent this. And the freaky phenomena, before there were any means of communications, you know, like internet or phones, was it turns out there was a synchronous invention or reception of those same inventions all around the world within a day or two or sometimes a couple hours. Other inventors, without any collusion, would have made the almost identical drawings, same concepts for invention. So the question I wanted to really get at is, where do fresh thoughts come from? Because the great composer Puccini always insisted that he never wrote one single note of Madame Butterfly, that his great opus was given to him entirely, in his words, by God. And how is that so different than a Michael Jackson who explained to his choreographer that the real reason he had to stay up was because God would give him, God was giving him original songs, and if he didn't stay up and refuse to fall asleep, but take down these songs, that God would turn right around and give them to Prince. Isn't that wonderful? But how is that so different than Puccini, right?
I love that.
As promised, we're here looking at the unbelievably cosmic paintings of Ingo Swann, who I had heard about for years and years. And Ingo was the most respected remote viewer.
What does that mean?
A remote viewer for our United States government was, after World War II, the Russians found themselves their best psychics, and they were very effectively doing spying, where their bodies would still be in Russia, but they would be sent to different coordinates of U.S. bases and operations and report on everything that was being said, what was in the, who was in the room, any documents. And it sounds like hocus pocus, but guess what? It is still going on today. We had a wonderful Lieutenant Colonel McNear who came, who was Ingo's student. And for 30 years, Ingo Swann was led the remote viewers for our United States government. But I met quite a few of them in my lifetime. But he was the most respected and an incredible cosmic painter. And we fell heir. Poor Ingo passed away in 2013. And his sister from New York and his niece said, we want all of his paintings to come to the American Visionary Art Museum. It was such a grace-filled gift. And in the meantime, many of the NSA people who worked with Ingo have come through this exhibition and told us amazing stories that no one ever heard before. So if you think this kind of visionary psychic stuff is all hocus-pocus, and some of it is certainly manipulated for all the most base reasons, but what was really great was that Ingo made a public declaration of the nature of the planet Jupiter before there were any probes, and Carl Sagan belittled him and ridiculed him. But now that our probes have gone by, absolutely to the smallest detail, Ingo was totally correct, down to the gaseous nature and that there were rings and what the moons, everything was right. So it's very interesting. It's another way of knowing. And I think all of us have that way of knowing. It's just a matter of degree. But let's go look here at St. Francis.
Okay.
Because everybody liked him, right?
We have St. Francis in our yard.
You do.
Yes.
I'm not surprised. Do you have him clothed or unclothed? Because you know he was one of our early following in the footsteps of both Isaiah and the prophet Samuel, prophesied in the nude. In fact, if you read carefully your Old Testament, you will find that that God instructed Isaiah to be butt naked, including barefooted, for 3 years and one day. So I juxtapose the story here of St. Francis, surrounded by his animals here, because he was a very rich playboy, and for years enjoyed wearing the finest clothes because his father was a textile merchant, and he was the heir apparent to that fortune. But just like the Buddha, two things sensitized him to a visionary experience of thinking of others. One, he went to war and he saw his friends die. And two, he had a near-fatal illness. And when he recovered, he was more sensitive to the needs of others. And a church had burned down. The people were too poor to barely eat, let alone replace the church. And he took two of the finest bolts of textiles from his father's store and gave it to the poor to be sold so that they could build a church. And the father took him to court. And the proceedings are a matter of record. And that is where St. Francis stood up and said, I am so glad this happened, because now I can say that Our Father who art in heaven prayer and mean only God. I no longer have an earthly father. And he stripped buck naked and walked through the town of Assisi, dropping trowel, so to speak, in the courtroom to never go back to the life he had before. And it's that aha, eureka moment where one person, it's not that they become a different person, they become another aspect of themselves, this higher self that's never been realized before. And much like the Buddha, they reject kind of like the finery of before, and they live a life of just being there for other human beings and for nature. You know, St. Francis is the patron saint of ecology. But here we have the juxtaposition. People don't realize that the term crazy like a fox does not mean the animal. It refers to George Fox, the founder of Quakerism, and that the early American Quakers often would go naked for a sign, and they would be, you know, prosecuted in colonial America and whipped and punished, and they weren't in any way being lewd. They were just seeking to go back to almost an Adam and Eve state of purity. And the largest spiritual festival in the world is really the Kumbh Mela that happens every 12 years in India. And here we have Deepak Chowdhury's amazing. He's a neighbor of yours, by the way.
Right. I've seen his photo in his house.
Yes, but this is the big version of it that he on the 2013 when they had the biggest ever, 100 million people of all backgrounds. But here are the naked sadhus, the Nagas, that are like that year round. They've renounced kind of this world. They're covered in ash and they're waiting to go into the Ganges. And he got this remarkable photo. So we may look at this photo and say, oh, that's a kind of a weird Eastern thing that happens. But no, this human impulse to be totally honest, it gets expressed whether it's the Quakers or whether it's the prophets Samuel or Isaiah. So let's go upstairs and look at some really remarkable
pictures. Let's do this.
Right now. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, me too. I love this. I love this place.
Well, you know, ABC, if you Google today, ABC top U.S. art museums for kids, Number five is Metropolitan Museum of Art. Four is Philadelphia Museum of Art. Three is Albrecht Knox. Two is Art Institute of Chicago. And number one, they put in the whole United States, is AVAM. Yeah. And so you see, even though we deal with very sophisticated subjects, that there are still, like, children that just the eye candy come away from here, and this is like imprinted on their hearts.
What do you think that says about this work, and especially this exhibit, that children love it so much?
Well, I think they kind of love all of our, you know, we never talk down to kids. But what was an amazing experience, too, is as I'll get to showing you Terrence Howard's artwork. And we're allowed.
Terrence Howard, the actor?
The famous actor. He has 3 United States patents. He has 53 pending. And in the 5.5, we got up the wrong floor. We're up at our, this is great.
We can always have a drink.
We should. No. Art, we have now the best restaurant in our history that just opened up. If you've ever been to Biroteca, it's the same owner, Robin Haas, but this is called Encantada, and it just opened for lunch yesterday, and it's totally been redone. They're the cleanest chefs I've ever known, and they have, it's the healthiest, most delicious food. It's been packed at night, and now we're waiting to see our daytime traffic, and you can come and sit on the brand new, dedicated to my dear friend, the Whirligig maker, Vallis, and his wife, Jean Simpson. And it's fantastic. We'll go out there a little bit later on. And the inside of the Encantada restaurant is also filled with our art. So it really is a perfect extension. And we have the visionary chef, Mel, sitting there planning her menu, I'm sure, right there. And we will also have a starving artist special every day. So if you're a kind of a starving artist, there will be something very reasonably priced and delish. Let's go downstairs together.
Right.
Although while we're up here, I can speak to you of the Mr. Eddie show, which is really not part of the visionary experience, that it will be up here well past the August, end of August date. But it is such a tour de force of one man, 6'4", lost both of his legs to diabetes and poured his heart out in that isolation in his hot Gainesville house into making the happiest global art. Art that looks like the masters poured under his own vision of them, like thick icing almost.
Wow.
Let's go down. And I'm glad we're up here now because you can see the Ingo Swann triptych masterpiece on our top floor opposite the new Encantada Cafe. And what people don't realize is that there was a lot more recruitment for people who had special psychic gifts by our government and other governments as well than you could ever imagine. And I think that it was discredited for a long time because they really didn't want that out. But now it has been permitted to speak about openly. And that's why we had Colonel McNear come, one of the most sincere, lovely human beings I've ever met. So let's go down. And on our stairwell, we have all sorts of quotes about the visionary experience from the great transcultural gurus from out
from Chomsky and
Einstein, who said, "The more I study physics, the more I'm drawn to metaphysics." So whether they're poets or inventors or scientists or composers like Puccini, this being in touch with where they could be fueled by the highest, most noblest, and most helpful thoughts is very, very consistent. So let's go, and I want to introduce you to one of my all-time favorite visionaries, whose name was Walter Russell. And Walter Russell, I came across when I was 22, when I saw Swannoa, his Italianate mansion down in Virginia near Charlottesville. He had already died, but I bought the book, which we sell here at our gift shop, called The Man Who Knew the Secrets of the Universe. And this is a person who was lifted up in light. He only went to school till he was 9 years old, but was such a polymath, such a genius in so many fields, that he went to New York, and he created the co-op housing system. He was an architect for many buildings. He created a periodic chart, which rightfully predicted two elements that no one had discovered yet, down to their atomic weight, so they kept his name for them when they were discovered. But late in life, he also wrote a book called Atomic Suicide in 1948. He just was so passionate and caring, but almost anything. And he said, I'm not special. You could do this too. I wanted to show you this bust that he did of his friend Thomas Edison. It's the first time he ever sculpted anything. And it's the most lifelike bust of his friend. And it was because he was friends with President Roosevelt, who had commissioned a bust, and he didn't like it. He said, it makes my friend look terrible and old. May I try? And so from that came the huge bust of Mark Twain, as well as a big commission called the Four Freedoms. But perhaps most remarkable about Walter Russell was when he turned 69. He said, I haven't taken care of my body as much as I should. I'm going to teach myself, because he loved physics, the art of a men's figure skating. And he took it on. And then he heard the U.S. Men's championships were going to be at Madison Square Garden. Before he turned 70, he entered and he won first prize over a field of men in their 20s. And that's true. And to this day, he's the oldest ever. So here's this scientist, artist, much like Da Vinci, who was also self-taught. You know, he was a bastard. So his inspiration was being alone, like it is for you, Mark, in nature. And I'm just really, we have a great book by Clifford Pickover called Strange Brains and Genius that really looks at the minds behind all these great thinkers and where did their inspiration come from in their own words. And it's pretty surprising. Being alone in nature is a big, big deal. So you're in very good company. Although you'll see here we have an essay on the hypnagogic state.
What is that? What is a hypnagogic state?
It's that state between waking and sleeping. You know, when Edison couldn't come up with the answer to a laboratory problem, he would consciously go take a nap. He spoke about it often. But that was true for many, many people, including Salvador Dali, who had learned from Capuchin monks a technique of holding, waiting until he was exhausted and sitting in a straight back chair with a key in his hand, a metal key, and a plate on the floor. And so the moment he would succumb to sleep, his hand would relax and clunk. And when he would hear the clink, he would only be out for maybe 30 seconds. And he said he would paint whatever he saw in that split moment when he could still remember it. Over here we have Art Crumb from, remember, Keep on Trucking?
Yeah.
He was so lovely to let us blow this up. This was his very faithful interpretation of the religious experience that Philip K. Dick had.
And who was Philip K. Dick?
Philip K. Dick is, we have all of his sci-fi books. If you ever got to see the great movie Blade Runner, which is one of, that comes from Philip K. Dick. Philip K. Dick was one of the most prolific sci-fi writers. But what's interesting is he went to have a tooth pulled, and they gave him sodium pentothal back then. And he came back, and he just saw a woman wearing like a fish, you know, one of the Christian symbols of like a fish. And for whatever reason, he had this vivid, what he thought was maybe a psychotic break, a remembrance of being back in the time of Jesus and what happened. And he thought, oh my gosh, I'm going insane, you know. But in the middle of it, he was told, in the middle of his vision, that his newborn son had a birth defect that could kill him at any moment. And the baby looked perfectly normal. He said that your son has a right inguinal hernia that has popped the hydrocele, gone into the scrotum. Get him to the doctor immediately. So he must have had a very understanding wife, this Philip K. Dick. And he went to the doctor. They performed surgery. And absolutely everything that he was told was true. The child had that he said he could have died at any moment. And that convinced Philip K. Dick. And this is, again, Art Crumb's wonderful, interpretation of it, that it was a real experience. It wasn't some, psychotic break. And I think many people have seen something and they don't know, am I crazy, you know? And it's wonderful, you know, to know not everything that people see certainly is true, but that there's a lot more. And I think, you know, Philip K. Dick was very grounded in care for others.
I'm speaking with Rebecca Hofberger, founder and director of the American Visionary Arts Museum, about their latest exhibit, The Visionary Experience, St. Francis to Finster. We're about to take a very brief break, and away to break, we're hearing Sun King by the Beatles, recorded on this day in 1969. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and you're listening to your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. That's Love or Let Me Be Lonely by Friends of Distinction. Barbara Jean Love of the Friends of Distinction was born on this day in 1941. I'm speaking with Rebecca Hofberger, founder and director of the American Visionary Arts Museum, about their latest exhibit, The Visionary Experience, St. Francis to Finster.
So let's come here, and we're going to see the Finster. You know a little bit about Howard Finster?
Let me ask you this question. I mean, the whole exhibition is St. Francis to Finster, right?
Right.
So I think maybe for our listeners to describe who Howard Finster is and before we talk about what's in here.
Okay. Reverend Howard Finster was a Baptist minister from Georgia who couldn't support his family, you know, just by preaching. So he also was very independent. He would fix TVs and bicycles and stuff. And he was just wonderful. But one day when he was 60, he was brushing on some white paint on a bicycle he was repairing. He looked down at his forefinger and he saw a little face. And he said he heard the words, "Begin to paint sacred art." And his first thought was, "I don't know how to paint sacred art." And he heard, "How do you know if you don't try?" And that began his beginning of becoming the most prolific, and this is after the age of 60, artist with 47,000 number works of art of all scale, some of them huge, and we have a wonderful film on Finster, and is, you know, from painted shoes to painted glass to all sorts of sculpture to secret papers that he wrote. And you can always see the UFOs like behind the big portrait of Daniel Boone. But he said wonderful things too. I got to know him, and I feel so lucky. He was he did the Talking Heads and REM record covers. You know, he went on Johnny Carson. You're going to see him on Johnny Carson in our show in this wonderful film. But what's really great is that he said things and meant them. He never judged people. He was not a narrow person. He said, "Faith and worry can't live in the same heart. One has to go." Or, "I never met a person I didn't love." A little bit, you know, and he really was something else. But he had a psychic experience when he was a little boy lost in the tomato patch. He said couldn't find his way out of the garden, and his 7-year-old sister, who had died of rabies, came down in a white dress. He said when he was little, and he depicts that here on a big, you know, stairwell, and said, "Howard, you're going to be, dry your tears, you're going to be a man of visions," and showed him how to get back to the house. And what's interesting, he never forgot that because he loved that sister so much. But he really had this concrete, you know, memory that he was helped. But it wasn't until he was 60, which is typical, frankly, of many of our visionary artists. They begin to find their voice after they raise their families, etc. And became the most prolific artist in America's history, trained or untrained. We have this, you know, the visionary experience hundreds of years ago of St. Francis. And then we look at the California cults as well. Did you know that you've heard of Oneida silverware, you know, silverware, right. Oneida? Did you know it started off as a sex cult?
Yes.
You did, because of course you would, Mark, but most people would not know that. Yeah, it was, later part of the 20th century, of the 19th century, a man was at Yale, which was, I think, a very Christian school at the time. He says, I don't want all this guilt. And he created a commune with free love and that kept all these, their children, raised them together. And obviously they had difficulty getting jobs, and they created Oneida Silver to be able to sustain themselves as a very alternative community. So we think of the 60s, and the thing is, is there really anything new under the sun, you know? So we here, before we get into our California Cult Room, we actually have the work of Judy Tallwing, and she is a full Apache Wonder Woman.
You talked about her before, and I had her work here before.
Yes.
Still dying to meet her.
Yeah, well, she's out actually helping a son-in-law right now, just had a lung transplant, but she will be back, and Christine Cephalosha, and all of her work is dotted with sincere prayer beads. Look how tiny these beads are, and each one of these had to have had a sincere prayer behind it, or it can't go into our artwork, and they're matched diamond little shards. If you move, you'll see them flash in the eyes of Lilith.
In the pupil, right? In the iris of the eye.
Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And you have this wonderful quote up here. If one is lucky, a solitary fantasy can totally transform 1 million realities. Maya Angelou.
And you know what? One of the nicest things of blessed memory, you know, Levi Watkins, Dr. Watkins, was her very, very close friend. And he took something I wrote from Holy H2O and shared it with Maya. And on her birthday, April 4th, I was in shop doing food shopping, and I got a call. He put her on, and she said she loved what I wrote. And so when she passed, I said, well, I got to have her quote take front and sever, sent to you.
I love Levi. He left us much too soon.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. I wanted to say, do you know who Ramanujan was? There was a young Hindu, brilliant mathematician, but who on very coarse paper sent off to England, to Hardy, the head of the math world at the time in London, during a time there was enormous prejudice against the Hindus, his theorems, and Hardy, to his great credit, looked at them and said, my God, this man is genius, and fought for him successfully for Ramanujan to win the field prize. And everyone realized what a brilliant, you know, theoretical physicist this mathematician was. But guess what? Years later, there were a group of Ramanujan's theorems that nobody could understand. There was just a few they didn't know what it meant. And 80, 90 years later, we realized they're about the best explanation for wormholes and stargates that ever was.
Wow.
But what you have to know is Ramanujan very humbly said, well, I did not write all these theorems. My household goddess, Namagiri, comes to me in dreams and gives me these theorems. Do you see a common thread in this?
Yes,
show?
I do.
This is done by Jody Willey. You know, did you see that brilliant young filmmaker, Jody Willey's The Source Family movie? On the best vegetarian restaurant that ever was, that was run by Father Yod, who had 14 wives out in California, and the, you know, typical. I used to eat there, not knowing that, and she did a brilliant film called The Source Family. But she's kind of an expert on alternative spiritual cults from the California, and she has several of them here, along with some of the fraternal orders of the Masons, etc. And this one woman was a very non-manipulative, benevolent guru. Her name was Uriel, or Ruth Norman, and she with her husband, Ernest Norman, founded the Unarius Academy of Science, waiting for, you see their Cadillac with the UFO? Welcome our space brothers, right? She said that her young devotees were having trouble in this life because their past lives were bothering them still. So she would get them to help them remember their past lives and make movies. And so she remembered, this guy remembered being a caveman when the UFO brothers came down. This is back in 1978. And that really told him that he had to let go of his warring way and never hurt anything. And And see, let's see how they, but this is the best part, Mark. They took full advantage of the early public access television, which let anybody put whatever they want if it wasn't hate-filled or pornographic. So the past lives of the Unarius students went across the country because they like totally got early days of public access television were there with their films. But one of the great things she did say, and I really respect, she said, no great work of art or science or philosophy has ever come from man's conscious mind. When this whole museum, the American Visioning Art Museum, has always been about this other way of understanding this world. It's another form of intelligence that doesn't come, this intuitive way of working, that doesn't come from sitting just in a classroom.
Amen.
Let's go see some of the work back here that merges both science and physics, but we have to walk past the greatest PR campaign visually ever when the Catholic Church was worried about losing to the Protestant movement more and more adherents. They dug up the bones of their Catholic martyrs and had the nuns trick them out with intricate jewels and fine, laces and gold everywhere, and put them in the villages where they were losing adherents to say, like, boy, if you stay with the Catholic program, you too could maybe really be honored like this. But it would backfired in that a few decades later, they became more popular. The townspeople loved these local saints they could see and hear, hear in touch, that they actually had to take them off. And down here is this the photo of Saint Mundito, who was the patron saint of spinsters, and she was very popular. So you begin here. But these were found in old monasteries after they had been taken out of the small towns. Because the Catholic Church didn't want to confuse people to not be praying to Jesus, Mary, and God, but they were preserved in the basement of old monasteries that often then became relais chateau hotels. So here we are, and I know a lot of people feel dumb about math, and we have to remember that their innovation can come from so many different people at a grassroots level. Marjorie Rice was a California housewife, mother of five, and she amazed the math world by sitting at her kitchen table and discovering 58 unknown geometric pentagonal forms that just blew away the math field. Now, if she had done one, it would have amazed them. Now we also have Paolo Saleri's artwork. He was the great Italian architect, and these drawings, original drawings by Paolo Saleri, have not been seen for 42 years since they were shown at the Whitney. And these drawings tell the way that Paolo Saleri felt when he came to study with Frank Lloyd Wright, and he departed the company of studying with Frank Lloyd Wright because he said, you're doing nothing to stop suburban sprawl. You Americans have this gorgeous country, and all you're doing is just, putting up horrible buildings and malls across the land. And he created Arco Sante, and these are the original drawings.
And Arco Sante is what?
Arco Sante is a utopia designed by Paolo Saleri as a self-contained desert community of what was supposed to be 5,000. It never got that big, but it does exist today, and they sustain themselves by making these very famous bells that are beautiful, kind of coppery bells. This guy, we gotta love. You ready?
The more I study physics, the more I am drawn to metaphysics. Albert Einstein.
That is right. Now, look at these drawings by Jason Paget. There's going to be a feature movie on the true story of Jason Paget.
You have to tell us who Jason Paget is.
And Jason Paget was like a regular guy who wasn't very gifted at math, who went to a karaoke bar and on his way home got mugged as so severely and beaten up that he ended up with brain damage. And when he woke out of his coma, he could see the fractal nature in everything. It's called a sudden savant. Jason Paget went, and with his profound, newly found understanding of the mathematical underpinnings of the world, went and lectured to Nobel Prize winners. He went and lectured repeatedly at Cal, at Stanford, and at Caltech. And all of these mathematical drawings are done freehand. People couldn't believe it at the copyright office, so they made him do a video showing that he has this ability. He said the mathematical, much like Plato, the math that underpins all of the reality is so magnificent. There's so much joy and care in it. But guess what? He's thinking math all the time. So when he came here to speak with Martine Rockblad and other integrative medicine speakers, he told us the best story. He had been on a radio show like yours, and off the top of his mind, he kept saying, oh, I understand target invisibility, how that would work. And he starts giving very precise angles of what human beings, of what the light bouncing back permits us to see things. He said, if we could just molecularly engineer a different angle, we could put that coating on any plane or anything, and you would have, you know, absolutely no ability to see it. You'd have target invisibility. And then he just, you know, jumped to something else. Well, he said when he finished, he gets a call from the NSA who said, Mr. Paget, you were just on such and such a radio show speaking about your theory of target invisibility and how it worked. We would very much appreciate if you would promise us you will never again speak publicly about your work, about your theories. And like a puppy dog, Jason said, does that mean I got it right? And they said, we can neither confirm nor deny, but we ask you to please never again speak publicly.
And did he listen?
Oh, yeah, he did. He did. Yeah, he was afraid. I don't know what. No, I mean, he's such a good guy. But it's amazing that something as bad as a mugging would release, much like... there have been other Peter Hurkos, who fell from a ladder and worked actually very closely with President Reagan as a personal advisor. It's like sometimes, not that you should try headbanging at home, but you know, sometimes injury will open up capacities that never existed before. And Jason's work is right next to the etheric sculptures of that fine actor. But above all, he loves science and math and philosophy. He's a devotee of, he knows every word that Walter Russell ever wrote. He came to the opening with his two children, and now he has a new baby boy that was just on board when he came for our opening, and he installed, these are the sculptures of Terrence Howard that dangle here out of celluloid, and they depict the structure of electricity, equilibrium, and magnetism. And he told this great story to our docents. He said, I really, really believe that everybody is born with a song that is coded into their unique DNA, and that if you could strengthen that song as different parts of them chemically kind of break down and wear down with age and reinvigorate with that song that is only for them, that you could actually reinvigorate them, give them back their youth and their health. And he said, I wish I had been able to finish my studies so I could have helped save my grandma. And so he's a profound thinker and a really lovely guy. And so, people are so much more complex. It was also Einstein who said, the greatest scientists are always artists as well. You think of Da Vinci and you think he played violin himself. But, you know, again, Terrence is a deep water for sure. And the last thing is, we also are privileged to show the artistry of Jimi Hendrix, which before he picked up a guitar, he wanted to be an artist. And he had met Bob Hieronymus, and he spoke with great passion about wanting to understand the symbols of the triangle, this Egyptian triangle on our American dollar bill. And we have his artwork down here. And I'll finish with that last with Boz, but you can see the self-portrait here These are all Jimi Hendrix.
These are all Jimi Hendrix paintings.
The names of things that have to do with what became later his songs. And look at his self-portrait that he did, which his lovely sister told me that he used to draw on her hand. This is the baby half-sister.
So he has Freedom, Untitled, The Prayer, and Wild Cries, Wind Cries Mary. Wow.
But come over here and we'll finish with this, because I think everybody at home can understand. We all know what the three major religions' symbols look like, but Bob Hieronymus had a very beautiful insight. He said, if you analyze, I think that the historians say that Jesus and the Romans did not crucify people on a cross, they crucified them on a T. So he said, if you look at all the religious symbols, the cross has the upright, which is always a male energy, and the horizon, the cross piece, which is represents the feminine. The Star of David, the Mogen David, has the downward triangle, which obvious reasons represents a woman, the birth area, the downward triangle. And the upward triangle, in perfect balance, always represents the male. So he said both the cross and the Star of David have that balance between male and female. But also Islam, all over the world, because women's menstrual cycle is always, you know, geared to a lunar time period. You have the crescent moon, which is like a womb around a star in equal balance. You have the star, the upright star, just like Da Vinci's perfected man is always the symbol of a male. So I thought that was so interesting that he had that insight, that somewhere is that knowledge that the divine encompasses both divine feminine and masculine in this great balance, or else it's off of balance.
I love this. This is an amazing exhibit. I'm going to read that quote here before we go. This is a beautiful quote. I love this. The structures with which mathematics deals are more like lace, the leaves of trees, and the play of light, and the shadow on the human face, than they are like buildings and machines, the least of the representatives.
Yeah, it's really everything that we do, you know, tries to just have everybody go out feeling that they have more trust in their own intuition and to learn the most beautiful, interesting thoughts that really I don't think they can get in one place anywhere else. And my fall show, and I'm going to be doing a big conference next year, will be Big Hope, the Big Hope Show with the Big Hope for Baltimore Conference in early 2016. And we're going to be looking at how Medellin, Colombia, the cartel hellhole of the world, could go from 3,600 plus murders a year to a fraction of that and get International City of the Year award. It is possible to change, and certainly our Baltimore has a lot more positives in place than Medellin, Colombia ever did. So it should be within our grasp, certainly in our generation here, to make magnificent changes for everybody here. And we're going to be looking at best practices around the world and here in policing, and also when those systems go awry. We're looking at the Angola 3 work in solitary confinement when it was unjust, and we're having Herman's House will be here, installation. But we're also going to remember the California trooper who for years was stationed at the Golden Gate Bridge. And that's, for me, he embodies Kevin Briggs, policing at its most ideal, community work. He talked 200 people down from perched on the edge of the Golden Gate Bridge from leaping. He lost 200 people. And he stayed with for 7 hours, just wouldn't stop being there for them. And I think we have to look at the best models around the world where police and community really work together and see themselves together living in one community for the highest good. And certainly we have many, many good police officers who I think if those changes can come about, will feel so much more peaceful and empowered to do the loving, caring job that they would like to do. You know what?
Love you.
My sweetheart, I want you to come around here. Yeah, yeah. I want you and Valerie to come and look at this. You know, we do our free movies under the stars on Thursday nights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we open up for free to everybody after 5 o'clock to 9 on those summer Thursday nights so that people can see... the visionary who don't have funds to do it otherwise, and then watch a movie together under the stars. But I'm walking you to the back of the building because last fall we completed the Aurora Borealis with incarcerated teens. We've been working for 14 years with Youth at Risk, and the last, 6 years of that with the William Donard Schaefer House kids, when we have ever had any money, we have had to start and stop. But we finished this magnificent wall. If you come around this way, the west side near the basketball courts of Federal Hill, and if you stand on top of Federal Hill, you'll see the final piece that was installed 3 weeks ago. And when these young men, 90% of these kids are in for nonviolent crime. And we forget that. We think, oh, it must be the really horrible kids who are incarcerated. A lot of them are in for things that if they had, you know, wealthy suburban parents, they wouldn't even see the inside of a courtroom, let alone have something on the record. And these kids have been the most marvelous, hardworking kids. And two big contracting companies, the Quandel, J. Vinton Schaefer, and Whiting Turner have apprenticed and taught these kids, after we've taught them the mosaic skills, they come in and they do a rotation in residential and commercial tiling. And they're amazed at what these kids have been able to do. This is not like Pachki kind of youth mosaics. This is like, oh my God, Gaudi-esque mosaics. And what's interesting is that... the NEKC Foundation said that the average child in Baltimore will move 12 times before they're 16. So there's a lot of impermanence. And what I love is that now we've been doing this 14 years, they come back with their kids because once they've given us 30 hours of apprenticeship on these walls, they making the beauty that is here for all of Baltimore and all the people who visit. They get lifelong membership to our American Visioning Art Museum. So finishing this building was a goal because this November we turned 20 years old. And I wanted the building to be dressed with the hands and the hearts of these young kids who certainly deserve all of our efforts to give them a better chance in life.
That's Rebecca Hofberger, founder and director of the American Visionary Arts Museum, talking about their latest exhibit, The Visionary Experience, St. Francis to Finster. On our way to break here, we're listening to I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free by the Billy Taylor Trio. Billy Taylor was born on this day in 1921.